huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge. Welcome to Disruptors. I'm Rob Moore, and this episode is like nothing you have ever seen or ever heard before. Now, my friend Ryan Pinnick, he is the owner and founder of Super Genius. Ryan Pinnick is an owner of one of my NFTs. He owns this episode. So if you go right now to supergenius.tv, take him up on his kind gifts and go to supergenius.tv. Disclaimer and warning, there are some very sensitive subjects that we discuss in detail. There is abuse, there is trauma, and there is rape discussed in this episode. I just want to warn you in case it's sensitive to you. So this is a bit of an experimental episode in that I'm here with my dear friend, Ryan Pinnick, super genius, super genius, soon to be trademarked. And a few weeks back, we had a discussion about whether you should date or marry an entrepreneur, because I think a lot of entrepreneurs feel like they're misunderstood and it's difficult holding down a relationship with an entrepreneur. And I know you left feeling like, I'm sure you won't mind me saying, and if you do mind, tough shit, but you left feeling like you maybe could have given more of you. And I've been really keen to talk to you about trauma, for us to have a discussion about it. So there's this paradox of success, whereby if we have trauma, it can recur and ruin our life. On the other hand, if you study virtually every successful person, they've had great trauma, even to the point where you said before we went live, a lot of your students at Super Genius say, well, do you have to have had trauma to be successful? So I know that's like the longest intro stroke first question, but what do you want to start talking about when it comes to trauma and being successful, Ryan?
So my experience is that I would not be where I am today if I didn't have that trauma. And I'm always curious about this idea, and it's something we talk about quite a bit. Personally, you know, I share what's going on in my life with you, and you know, thanks to you, you've really given me the courage to come back again, explore more intimately where these conversations could go, and hopefully also just inspire people that, you know, if they are possibly going through a difficult time, maybe there's a blessing in that, as we learned the Americans say on Clubhouse. So my analogy, the thing that really resonates for me is that analogy that diamonds are created under pressure. So that, I believe that to be true, but I think the problem, Rob, is that, you know, you can give lots of people pressure, but then it's probably going to go the wrong way if they don't have the right support, the right mentor, the right community, etc. So I'm a big believer in the concept of structure, community, the right people, etc., etc. I mean, we just saw the pressure of lockdown, for example, imposed upon everybody else. On everyone. I adhere to the rules. And a lot of people.
Did you really though? We just had someone who didn't.
Well,
by the way,
we'll tell you in another episode. Stay tuned in. But my point is, we saw it have a significant adverse effect on people. So you can't just have the pressure and the trauma as a standalone force to then achieve greatness in entrepreneurship or any other of life. And we did talk before we went live that there seemed to be a common thread that those who have achieved greatness most likely in some way, shape or form, either parental or circumstantial, did experience some kind of trauma. So I'm fascinated by it because what I try and simulate in my trainings and so forth is to give people the pressure without the trauma. And it's a topic that I'm particularly curious about. But I am who I am today because of my trauma and then the people that put around me to help me deal through that stuff. So But there's been a lot of times when I've had breaking points and yeah, it was dark. So
a mutual friend and mentor of ours has this saying, in every stressing lies a blessing. And that's what popped into my head. But I'm just going to fucking say this, and we might have to edit it out, but I'm just going to say it because this is an experimental episode. What's the blessing in 21 people getting shot in a school in Texas and 19 of them kids? Like, I completely see where most downsides have an upside. But where's the blessing in that?
So that's a very open-minded conversation. So I will just share my opinion on that. And that is, I think it's contextual, you know. Where was the blessing for me in losing contact with my daughter? And let's call a spade, I can blame the folks in the tradition of South African families and Christianity and all of that kind of stuff. But call a spade, I gave up responsibility of my daughter, yeah? And actually it was that mentor who pointed out the blessing for me. So the blessing was it put me on a trajectory to go into the UK and learn personal development and have that pain and figure that out. So it's contextual. I think it's you can't really look at one thing and not take all the factors. Obviously, in the universe of the parents in that scenario, obviously, I would never say there's a blessing in it. In fact, I was thinking about this on the way here. You know, often people would say to me, well, you should be grateful for the things that you've experienced. You should be grateful for the traumas you've experienced. You should be grateful that, you know, your dad was violent and you witnessed your mom getting beaten up. You should be grateful that, you know, you got raped at the age of 20. And I don't...
People have said that to you?
Well, spiritual people would, wouldn't they? They go, you got to be grateful for the experience. It's a positive experience. Now, I remember our mutual friend Daniel Priestley saying something, and I really love that, and that is, you can be right or you can be helpful or happy. So in that context, with that particular tragedy that you mentioned, maybe the blessing, I don't know, and I'm speaking out of turn here because I'm not qualified in this, is that one day we get closer to, in the US anyway, changing the gun laws.
That's what I'd hoped, but they seem to be doing, yeah. Nothing seems to be moving. I mean, there's been hundreds of these mass shootings.
Yeah.
By the way, I didn't have this on the question, but I've wanted to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because I want to understand how things work. And yeah, because in Dunblane, it happened once in Scotland, and those kids got shot in Dunblane, and the law changed. In Pret-a-Manger, a girl ate a sandwich and died of a nut allergy, and that changed things. I see the blessing. But when the fuck are America going to wake up? How many stressings do we need to have of innocent children getting shot before things change? So, yeah, I agree. Hopefully it does something. And I sort of think, Ryan, sorry, I jumped in, but...
No, please do.
On an individual, on an emotional level, I find it fucking hard to see the upside in rape and murder and shootings. And this is why I want to talk to you about it. On a macro, if you were looking down on the universe and the world was a tiny little dot, I think I could see it a little bit more because, you know, and I'll just say some generic things. If we did, like, why is there conflict? Why do we have wars? Well, if there wasn't conflict and we didn't have wars, maybe there'd be overpopulation because we'd all be just making love all the time and we'd be 10 trillion of us. So as a much wider view, I think I can see reasons. It's just so hard to see it. Like you said, I know you're trying to be really respectful of the parents and the families, but let's now bring it towards individual trauma, because you either hold on to that your whole life and it ruins your life. Well, let me just jump straight in. The first time you told me that you got raped, I was shocked. I know you for so long, I didn't even know. And I really admired you for saying it. And I was stuck because part of me thought, that makes me feel so much pain, I don't ever want to talk to Ryan about that again. And then part of me thought, if we could openly talk about that, fuck me, that would be an amazing discussion to have. So we can either not talk about it and we'll just turn the cameras off, or we can talk about it. That's your choice.
And just to let everyone know, I haven't just thrown this on Ryan. We sort of talked about this before, but do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I think, I think I'm more mystical in my philosophy. You're quite pragmatic, and I think that's why we enjoy having discussions. You know, I like to, I'm probably a bit more romantic in my philosophy as well. Like, I like to think that we come down on earth and we have a purpose. I know you're quite pragmatic and stoic in your opinion on that. So that's why we have great conversations. So to go back to the point with, the shootings, maybe there is some mystical reason. Maybe, you know, the world is meant to go through a change. That's what I think makes human nature and living exciting, because we don't have all the answers. And then to go back to my own journey on that experience, to piggyback off something we spoke about in a previous episode.
Sorry, I just need to give context here. So whatever's in your mouth, don't lose it. That episode might not be played before this one.
Correct, yeah. And now I'm going to create the context.
So, yeah, yeah. And
so, so what I said in that...
You said something along the lines of that you attracted it, yes. And I was floored by that.
So that, you know, when you encourage me... You know, you're honestly, you're a great mentor and you're a great friend, and you always encourage me to say, you know, what I believe and be unapologetic about that. I'm getting to that point in my life. So I'm just milking you for more podcast episodes and followers. I've been there 10 years ago. I'm just milking you for more episodes.
Yeah, do it.
But anyway, so if you had to say to me, what's the one philosophical thing that I believe that I teach and actually get results with that creates the biggest polarization, it's that you attract everything in your adult life, the good and the bad. So everything in our adult life, you attract 100%.
So how did you attract being raped at 20 years old?
And that's what brought that question up, right?
Yeah.
And what I said to you, which, you know, I had to really think about the sensitivity of the topic, because it doesn't just involve me, is I'd seen my dad violate my mother in ways that I now realize I normalized. You know, I saw my mom, give us a beautiful dinner, and my dad just not be happy with that and fucking throw the plate and smack her around. And so all of that experience became my model of the world. If you can imagine that, just roll with me here for a second. So sexual violation, mental emotional violation, financial violation, that was my, I know that sounds crazy, that was my normal. You know, if I saw my dad beating up a black guy for the sake of it, because I grew up in white South Africa, like up until the age of 18, I'd only ever met 5 black people. When I moved to England, I was like, oh my God, there's black people everywhere. It's just like, it was different, you know? So that was my normal world. So can you understand that from a point of view, I'm focusing on how to survive in a traumatic environment. And therefore, if you believe in the law of attraction in some way, shape, or form, and, you know, putting your thoughts out there creates your reality, I'm looking to survive in a traumatic environment. Hence, I actually attract it. I'm attracting the very thing that I'm familiar with, even if it's unhelpful. Does that make sense?
Is this why, like, maybe people in relationships attract...
Correct. The same bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah, never date a South African. There you go. We've gone straight into the tips already. What are we, 5 minutes in? Right? So therefore... To give my mom as an example, and I've thought long and hard about the nature of the sensitivity and the detail, but let's give that example. My mom grew up with a violent, abusive, alcoholic dad. That was her model of the world. Show her kindness, show her love, show her wealth, show her generosity. It's unfamiliar. And actually, people are afraid of uncertainty. So therefore, in my mom's consciousness, and this comes down to my favorite quote of all time, until you make the unconscious conscious, it'll direct your life and you will call it fate. That's the foundation of the work that I teach. A lot of people do the law of attraction, the secret, vision boards, goals, and all that kind of stuff, but they're not taking out the weeds of their consciousness. They're not realizing that what they're doing is just replaying their childhood over and over again until they become conscious of it, until you bring that trauma up. So in the case of my mom, where she grew up with a violent, abusive, alcoholic dad, her model of the world, her safety mechanism, her comfort zone, believe it or not, is violence, abusive, and alcoholism. Wow. Not happiness, kindness, which you would probably write down on a goal-setting exercise or probably put on a vision board, right? Which is why these things don't always work. So therefore, when she attracted my dad, because she was looking for that,
So you filter
unconsciously, not on purpose. Yeah. She wasn't going, hey, you know, on her Tinder profile in 1970 or whatever it was back then. I'm looking for a violent, abusive, alcoholic man. Just, you know, ping me a message. She didn't do that, obviously.
Yeah.
She thought she was looking for love, but what she was attracting, because that's what she knew how to survive in as a coping mechanism, she attracted my dad, violent, abusive, alcoholic man. They fell in love. They thankfully had me. They never had sex once. It was immaculate conception. All right. Nobody likes to think of that. Is that true? Just joking. And so fast forward a few years later, dad breaks my arm. I'm in hospital, which, by the way, I forgot. I completely normalized that trauma. When my mom told me about the story, I was like, oh yeah, fucking hell, I remember that. It's like weird to go back to your topic on trauma. My parents split up. A few months later, my mom builds her courage up. She goes out dating. She goes, you know what? Last dude was a Scorpio. Must be a star sign thing. Dates a different star sign. It's not the star sign. Violent, abusive, alcoholic man. Boom, boom, boom. Next guy, next time. Until you heal your unconscious mind, you're going to keep attracting that stuff. And you don't even know that you're doing it, mate. That's the key thing here. So, you know, Joseph Campbell's got an amazing expression and a concept around facing your demons. That's your trauma or your fears, or, you know, Susan Jeffers would say. And so the most powerful personal development work, which I really have to honor you for, because I know you do this a lot in various forms. You've spoken quite openly about going for therapy, and I thought that was really courageous and vulnerable of you. And so the most powerful work we can do is bring up those demons, bring up those traumas, bring up those fears, bring up what's holding us back in our unconscious past, face it, realize it's part of us, love it unconditionally, and then make a different choice and choose love, choose wealth, choose abundance, whatever that thing is. So that's why people recreate the same thing over and over again in relationship if they don't face it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
It's a big concept, so I've tried to keep it simple.
No.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So it takes a lot of self-awareness to say, for you to say that you attract what happened to you when you were 20. Can you talk us about what happened?
Yeah, so what I've noticed about myself, and we all have this, by the way, there's layers in our unconscious mind. So we all have a set sequence of steps that we take to sabotage ourselves. If you just think about self-sabotage. So what happens for me, and obviously there's a process that I go through to extract this with, you know, self-awareness. I do something that I get great results in, right? So on this night, I'm a pretty decent pool player, as I've told you, and maybe we'll do that.
Yeah, you haven't played me yet.
Yeah. we'll do a little wager on that, right? So I won that competition again. So I was excited. I got elated. Now, you know about this concept, right? So yeah. I got elated. I lost that groundedness, or whatever DMR would say. And so there's tension. And Robert Fritz talks about tension beautifully, if anyone wants to read up on this. It's critical. Because think about it. Trauma is tension. It's just energy. And if we can channel that energy into something creative, as many people that we discussed before we went live have learned how to do in some way, shape, or form, then actually you can achieve greatness, and you can channel trauma into greatness, and then channel that pressure into diamonds instead of mental, emotional, financial health, and even suicide that we saw in the pandemic, right? But my point is that that night, I got elated, I got excited, I got cocky, as you know, and then I attracted something anyway to bring me down. But what I attracted wasn't random. It was structurally a reflection of something I'd witnessed in my childhood, almost like a mirror, almost like a paper cut, almost like the scar I've got on my elbow that I keep forgetting about every time until I tell the story. It's there, dude. You know what I mean? And so what happened was these guys came over, and, you know, two of them, and I was taking drugs back then anyway, so it wasn't such a big deal for me to see people on drugs. It was about 3 a.m, and these two crackheads came over jokingly and, just put a knife to my neck and said, we want you to go buy some crack. But the way I deal with trauma is I actually tell jokes. So, so I thought they were joking, right? And, you know, very quickly I realized this is a serious situation. They took my wallet, they took the car keys, they were driving me around. Hardly anyone knows the story. And I've kept this quiet because I didn't want to upset my mom. And I had a lot of shame around it as well. So that's why I'm okay now talking about it. And basically, you know, I was a student at the time, and they just rinsed my bank account. And then we went up to their apartment, and it was a pure crack den. It was probably a good dozen people lying there, completely mashed up on crack cocaine. Went in the room, they locked the door, and then that's when I realized I'm in a serious fucking situation. Like, I don't have my keys, I don't have my wallet, I don't have anything. I'm in a crack house, basically, and the door's been locked. So I was like, fucking hell, what do I do? And then the dude that had the knife and his buddy come in, they've obviously taken a toke of what, you know, the crack that they bought. And his wife comes in, and he said to me, now you're going to fuck my wife. And I said, no, dude, you know. And I think this is where, like, the real shame comes in, you know, like, because I felt really helpless. I was like, this is, you know, sometimes when you're in a situation, you're like, okay, this is bad. And then it just goes to another level where you go, like, fuck, I'm really fucking shitting myself. This is like, where, how does this end? You know what I mean? And like I said, no, I I'm not going to do that. And they smacked me around a bit. And then I just had to surrender and just fucking do whatever they told me to do. And had to, like, fuck this guy's wife and, you know, do exactly what they told me to do. And you see, the thing is, dude, it's so weird because from a traumatic perspective, I didn't really think anything of that until someone in my workshop described a similar situation and called it rape. And then I went, fuck, was because I, in my naivety, because I am very naive, and you know, when you do run workshops, you learn lots of things, don't you? You get this reflected back. I thought, can men get raped? Like, is that even possible? And I looked it up and I was like, yeah, like, yeah, it's hardcore. And fortunately, there's a funny end to this. A few hours later, my humor got me out, funny enough.
So it lasted hours?
Yeah, it was about 8 in the morning now, and I had to go to uni. And I knew that my mom was going to wake up, and she was going to... My mom really worries. We had a very codependent relationship because of the trauma we both went through. And she was used to me being extremely mischievous and unreliable and, you know, rocking up back home after nights out with telephone poles and all sorts in the cars and very naughty, but not, like, not home. And I was like, fuck, I need to get home. And yeah, so that's when I said to the dude, listen, you've taken my money, I fucked your wife, you could at least give me a fucking beer and a hit. And in a strange way, I kind of created a rapport. And then said to them, hey, let me go get you one more hit. But I got uni, and mom was going to get worried. And that's actually how I got out of it. But I never thought of that ever again. I kind of suppressed that. And I've been chatting with someone about trauma, a therapist, about the normalization of trauma. For me, that was just like a funny story. But then when I heard someone in my workshop share their story vulnerably and how much impact that had on them, God, it really, really fucking touched a part of me that I think I had buried, you know?
So and felt pain for them, and then it reflected that pain back for you.
Yeah. So, yeah. So you know, that's brought up a whole bunch of dysfunction around sexuality and shame around sex and needing to be drunk to have sex in my 20s. But when I do certain meditations, what we do is we link back a childhood experience that's caused a sabotaging situation. And you know, last year I had a long-term relationship come to an end, and this is one of the things I looked at was my shame around sexual intimacy sober. And that event came up, and I realized, yeah, fuck, I've been suppressing sexuality.
And that was the source of it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, the actual source was seeing how my dad treated my mom sexually and you know, just like a piece of shit, basically. So unconsciously, I made up that sex is bad, men are bad, men and sex are bad. I love women, I want the best for women, so therefore I shouldn't be sexual in that sense. And that's why I used to drink and do a lot of cocaine, just to express my sexuality.
Fuck.
Yeah. So I know it's a big concept, right? But was that clear? Was that, you know, did it make sense in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I'm just trying to process it all.
So the liberation, dude, the liberation is when I faced that and I went, yeah, I'm not broken. It was an experience. I made up a strategy of shame around sex. As soon as I became aware of that, you know, I went on a healing journey around sexuality and intimacy, and it's still ongoing, obviously. But, you know, with awareness comes healing, in my opinion.
Now, my friend Ryan Pinnick, he's been a friend for around a decade. He is the owner and founder of Super Genius. And Ryan specializes on helping you unleash your genius within, maximize your potential. And at supergenius.tv, Ryan runs regular masterclasses on accessing this genius within you. How to master your life, how to turn your passion and genius into a professional business, and content on business coaching, leadership, spirituality, and relationships. So if you go right now to supergenius.tv, that's supergenius.tv, I give Ryan my highest glowing recommendation, not just as someone I've collabed with, not just as someone I've done business with, but a dear personal friend. So take him up on his kind gifts and go to supergenius.tv.
What I'm trying to process is what, because you're a teacher, it's what you do. And so you're turning your trauma into inspiration to help others, which I think is amazing. I'm also trying to process this as a friend of yours. Yeah.
And I want to thank you for creating the space for me to talk about with you, but also talk about it publicly, because it's these little events that have stopped me from producing content, producing podcasts. I've paid for your podcast agency. I don't have podcasts out there.
I know all this. Yeah. I believe in you and your, I believe in you and your content more than you do.
Yeah, I just think I'm just like really ashamed of my past, you know? Do you know what I mean? Like, because, you know, like when you're a speaker, everyone's like thinking you had it easy and stuff. And, you know, that's one story. The fact that I failed as a father when I was 19. I think I'm just, I just think I'm just ashamed of like what I've done in the past. And it is my motivation to be a better person now. But it's a bit like, I won't say it's imposter syndrome or feeling like a fraud. It's just more, it's just that negative emotion, you know, like Napoleon Hill said, the number one reason people fail is the inability to master negative emotions. And here I am fucking facing them, man, with you. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
I do share this stuff a little bit more in the context of my more mastery-orientated training because it's context. But, you know, but like you, dude, let's get real here. Like, we all want to be liked, and I know, you know, criticism's not great and we want to fit in, but then the paradox of that is the more you just blend in and the more vanilla you are and the more beige you are, the less you're liked. It's paradoxical, isn't it?
Yeah. I called this an experimental episode, and we're purposefully...
We should have called it a therapeutic episode.
Yeah.
Send me an invoice, bro.
Yeah, I will. And we purposefully didn't have any live phones here. Because obviously we're going to a really sensitive subject, but I kind of wanted to explore what that would mean. What I want to say is that... I really admire you for talking about it. And I really admire the fact that you're leveraging what's happened to you. And because if I'd said that story to you, you would say to me, that's not your fault, Rob. Because it's not your fault how you were raised. That's not your fault. It's not your fault how you were conditioned. It's not your fault what those crackheads did. It's not your fault about... you know, your daughter. And I know you'd have that sympathy, empathy, and love for someone else. I know you would, if you would have that for me. But I'm not here to reassure you per se, but I know, I've been telling you to launch a podcast since, you know, the dinosaurs became extinct. And, you know, I think some of your, well, a lot of your, but you get a lot of really good, you know, when you go into vulnerability mode on social media, you get fucking great engagement. And, you know, I'm a big champion of wanting to put yourself out there because you're a friend. I've got your back. obviously, I think you should have a podcast. I mean, I'm doing these two episodes with you, but clearly what's happened to you is puts a barrier there.
Yeah.
And therefore, there must be so many other people who listen to this show and watch who must have something, because, yeah, I can understand why you want to put yourself out there, but you don't want criticism, ridicule, rejection, shame that can come with it. So let's now move off away from you and talk about how can others who've experienced trauma, shame, pain, loss, whether it's as serious or not serious, because it's all serious to us, how, let's talk about how others can face those demons and put themselves out there. Because that's the journey you're on. Because I know every day I have to face my pain and my shame. Well, I don't have to. I just fucking choose to. Because I want to be rich. I want to make a difference. I want to be successful. I want to prove to all the bullies and all the kids at school and the girls that didn't like me, I want to fucking check me out now. You know, that's a driver. So every day I force myself to do painful things every fucking day. And my wife is like, why are you doing this to yourself? You don't need to. But every day I make myself do it. And I, at times, hate how I feel. But I do it anyway. Let's talk about how we can help other people do that.
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's an interesting world, the spirituality world, because unapologetically, it's easy to be enlightened meditating in a cave for 30 years where there's no conflict. There's no, you know, coming second in the Premier League on the last day. There's no then following that up by losing the Champions League. So, you know, how spiritual are you when your team get relegated, or, you know, or you have a difficult event, or you have something where you experience significant loss? And I think what's beautiful about the word enlightenment, and I don't actually know the real definition, is my perspective is that I like to enlighten the darkness. What's going on in my unconscious mind? Why am I afraid? What's the wound? In fact, the Sufis say your light is through the wound, right? Not around it, or not on a vision board, and not on affirmations, or, you know, not in a silent retreat anywhere. And those techniques are all fantastic, but one day you've got to face conflict. One day you've got to face rejection. One day you've got to face criticism. That's probably where I'm at right now, is the criticism part. So hands down, I would say the most important thing, if you said to me and you pressed me for one thing, I'd say the one thing you can do to help yourself overcome yourself is to, and I know it sounds like a fridge magnet, find people that you aspire to be like. You know, I confide in you a lot because I respect your awareness. I respect your ability to and your desire to master yourself and learn and show kindness and towards others, and particularly people who are not necessarily showing kindness to you. So I like, fucking hell, if I get 10% of that, I'm winning, right? So I always look at who do I admire and how can I get a piece of that. Secondly, I think it is important to take time out and document what's going on. So Julian Cameron has an amazing process called the Artist's Way. Wake up in the morning, write down 3 pages of what pops up in your head. I think that's good in the beginning because you start to become aware. But if you did that for life, you'd probably top yourself.
Yeah. Right?
Like, I'm still the same bastard. So you got to press on a little bit. But
yeah.
You know, a little technique that I do if I'm feeling less than perfect or stressed or under pressure or something's not going my way, or I want to go deeper and say, how did I attract the situation? Mm. Yes, I want to blame someone else. Yes, I want to blame Boris. Yes, I want to blame the pandemic. Yes, I want to blame all that. But if I am open to the concept that everything in my reality is a reflection of my consciousness, let's explore that. In other words, as you said in a different way, I'm going to take responsibility for my reality. Even if something happened to me or someone happened to me, or something, I'm going to go, because I believe that, you know, consciousness is a vibration and we do attract things. I think the law of attraction is happening all the time, not just when you listen to Rhonda. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm like, fuck, my fiance red carded me unexpectedly. I can blame her. I can do this. I can do all that, which is what people would do on Love Island. Or I can enlighten myself as to how I possibly attracted that, because let's be humble, if I may, maybe the aspects that I didn't see, maybe I got a blind spot, which is all true. So then I go, right, what am I thinking? Ah, oh, fucking bitch, what the fucking, doesn't she know who I think I am? I've got 5,000 followers on Instagram. You know what I mean? I was like, right, write all that down. You know, you might write it down as if no one's going to watch it or read it, right? So what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What am I meaning about this person? What meaning am I associating? Ah, oh, they're a typical woman, blah, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff. So you get your thoughts and your feelings down, and then you literally just close your eyes, and then you ask yourself, what negative emotion am I experiencing? Now, in the beginning, that might not pop up as easily and effortlessly as if you had practiced this exercise. But what you want to do is get to a negative emotion: fear, anger, depression, frustration, anxiety, elation.
Self-loathing.
And elation.
Elation.
You can actually be so positive that you're actually attracting negativity in life.
To bring you into balance, yeah.
So write those emotions down. Close your eyes and then say, let's say I'm feeling frustrated. What's that making me want to do? Criticize, blame, judge, impose rules on the staff, whatever, right? And then go, right, if I was going to go down that path, what's the most likely outcome? Because I believe there's two parts to us, our ego, our wound, and then our genius, our higher self, and love and kindness, right? So then you might go, as an alternative switch, what would I love in this moment? And if you don't know, or we've never asked that question, start small. When I started asking myself that question, I got into a lot of debt. I'd overdone the property thing. I was too aggressive. I was too excited. I had no mark. You know what I mean? I was like buying houses and...
Mark Homer, my business partner, for those.
He was extremely good at detail.
Yeah.
And that's not my genius. So I was buying all these houses not knowing about this thing called cash flow, which is pretty important if you want to stay in business. Recommend you look it up. And I got into debt, right? So I screwed myself financially, cash-wise. Equity-rich, cash poor. So my point then was, at that time, I felt so guilty about having people's money tied up. I stopped treating myself to the cinema. I stopped treating myself to a cup of tea or a scone or a crisp or whatever. And the first day I practiced what would I love as an alternative question, as opposed to where's my negative emotions going, I got tea and scones. And I thought, that's fucking weird. Like, but I started and I made it a ritual. Every morning I'd go to the beautiful tea shop down the road, have tea and scones. And by shifting my orientation towards what I love as opposed to my past, and therefore recreating it, and then the snowball created, like, what else would I love? Oh, I'd love a ticket to be a season ticket all at Anfield. I'd love to reach out to Rob and speak at his events, which is why I messaged you a few years ago. And so then that's one way to go about shifting the focus from the negative emotion, which we're all addicted to, by the way. Under pressure, that negative emotion is very powerful. And then we do things, say things, a regret, to then going, let's create what we love instead of recreating our past. Mm. So that's a process I teach people. I hope that was helpful.
That was epic.
Yeah.
Epic. Something I learned is, why is this good?
Mm.
So sorry if this bursts anyone's bubble, but everyone who's ever done anything meaningful has to have multiple failures and multiple breaks. And the bigger you are, the more they happen. Multiple, 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 multiple failures and breaks. And every level presents its new devil and they just get bigger. And the reward for solving a problem is a bigger one. And, you know, when we all start in this world, we're looking for passive income, financial freedom. We have this naivety that we reach this utopia where all the problems go. And here we are at this utopic fantasy. So... a question that really helps me is, why is this good?
Mm.
So I can absolutely say every day, every single day, so me being negative, every single day, multiple things don't go how I want. And so the first thing is, when things don't go how you want, you initially created a fantasy, i.e. So you asked me two or three times, what is the theme? And I said to you, I don't have one. Had I created a theme, I would have created a reality, a goal, an outcome. which you and I could then have felt that we didn't achieve.
Mm.
This discussion has no theme. Therefore, it has no expectation. Therefore, we can't create a delusion or a fantasy of what this should have been. Now, I know what I'll do and what you'll do, because we did it on the last episode and we do it all the time. We'll travel back and we'll think about how we could have done this better and what we don't want to go out in public and that we want to do a version 3 and make it right. But that's because we will create a fantasy, i.e. it should be this way. So for example, and I probably shouldn't, I'm going to talk about this, fuck it. Harry and I went and I interviewed someone a couple of days ago. And in the interest of respecting this person who didn't respect my show, I'm not going to name the person or what he invented or co-invented, but he invented and co-invented something really fucking famous. And he lost his shit 15 minutes in. I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to talk about that. This has to come out. I want to move on. I don't want to talk about this anymore. And at the end, Harry was like, well, that was fucking cringe and really awkward. And I said, no, it was fucking awesome. I'll send you the... Harry sent me the 2 minute. We're not publishing it. It's the best part of the interview. I'm not publishing it out of respect. Well, the fact is, I said to the guy I wouldn't publish it, so I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And I don't like him any less, and I'm not judging. But if I expect an interview to go how I want it to go, it can only be a failure. Whereas if I'm just in the moment of enjoying myself and being present, yeah, I want a direction and a goal and an outcome for sure, but I'm not pushing that too hard and I don't create this tension of how it must be. It can't let me down and I can't let me down. So what we do, I believe, when we create pain is we create a naive, a delusion, a fantasy, an expectation of how we want something to be. And as soon as we do that, and the reality can't live up to that because we created the fantasy, and I'm really good at creating that fantasy because I'm a dreamer. So immediately we create pain. So what I learned to do, because I'm a natural fantasist, which has really great upsides, but being a natural fantasist creates loads of pain. And it's not reality because we're creating a fantasy. So we're literally creating pain in ourselves with a delusion. So then I've learned to ask myself, why is this good? At the moment, our internet at home is shit and it's really pissing me off because it's fucking up all my lives and my lives are going really viral at the moment. So it's a fucking problem. And I said to my wife,
Do you think they're doing it to you? Found you, bro.
But if I ask myself, why is this good? Maybe I didn't get the right headline. Maybe I should do 8 p.m. I'm religiously doing my 3 p.m. lives. Couldn't do it today because Matt was late and you are here. So in my mind, I'm like, why is that good? Well, maybe I'll do it at 8 p.m. and it'll be more viral. But if you ask yourself, why is this good? And you ask yourself enough times, you always find the upside.
So let me ask you a question then. Right, I'm going to bat one back to you in the spirit of the...
The fact that this is a discussion.
Yeah. Because I am genuinely curious about this.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, one of the themes popping up is vulnerability. So on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at around the sensitivity, let's say in podcasts, when it doesn't perhaps go according to plan? I know you did Floyd Mayweather, for example, right? Versus maybe when you started out hundreds of episodes ago. So I would imagine hundreds of episodes ago, you get feedback. I remember one episode about a year or two ago, or maybe 3 years, you had a water bottle in front of the camera and no one's listening to the content. Everyone's like, get the fucking water bottle out the way. Oh, what kind of a podcast is this? And I was like, that's why I'm not doing a podcast. I'm going to screenshot that and send that to Rob and say, dude, give me a refund of the podcast agency. But you know what I mean? Like, and so how has that journey gone from... building, is it just being thick skinned and saying, oh, fuck you, I don't really care? Because you are a sensitive person. And when I talk about you to people, I say, yeah, he's a great friend of mine. And you know what? he's much more sensitive than you'll realize, not in a kind of weak perspective, but in an awareness perspective, mental, emotional, aware perspective. So how did you go on that journey, and how did that resilience build up? And is it a fuck you attitude, or is it just a familiarity or a compassion? Like, what is that journey like?
So I had to learn conflict, being thick-skinned, not giving a fuck, being unashamedly yourself. Mm. I had to learn those things because they were unnatural to me. So here's the weird thing. In a conflict situation, most people regret losing their shit. I would admire myself if I lost my shit, because I always suppress myself in a conflict situation. So I've got the opposite for most people. If I went, you shouldn't have fucking said that, that's wrong. That would be a great sense of, wow, I was strong enough to do that. There was this really weird situation where I was in a restaurant outside and I was with my family. And one thing I can't stand is when people eat food and they chomp and they show their food and they make loads of noise. But I sit there and I say nothing. And this woman was behind a couple of tables back and she was coughing. She was going...
Amazing.
And gobbing up all this phlegm in a fucking restaurant. And I felt so much shame that I wouldn't say, I just sat there imagining that my sandwich was full of snot. I couldn't eat my food. Mm. But I stood up and I walked over to her and I went, I'm sorry, would you mind when you cough not hacking up your phlegm, because this is a restaurant and I'm finding it difficult to eat my food. And she went, oh, I'm sorry. And I went, I just wanted to be polite and say it, but it was important to say it. And I went and sat down. And it took so much strength to do that, because I would naturally just shy away from any of that conflict. And I felt really proud of the example that I gave to my kids. Because what my dad would have done is he'd have got up and he'd have either headbutted the woman or he'd have shamed her in front of everyone. Because my dad was the opposite. My dad loved conflict. He'd beat people up. He'd just lose his rag. And I had admired the strength, but it wasn't strength, it was weakness, because he couldn't control his emotions. But I had the opposite, where my weakness was I couldn't express my emotions. So the thing is, we've all got emotions that bubble up that stop us being our authentic self. So most people have to learn to control them. I had to learn to express them. So, I learned to argue with people because I'd never argue. I must have had 15 years of relationships from the age of, 14 to nearly 30 years, where I never had an argument with a woman. Never. I never, ever dumped someone face to face, because I could never have conflict. So obviously I'd do it in a horrible way over text, or get a friend to say or something, or just ghost them. So this avoiding conflict fucking started to really ruin my life. Mm. And I didn't know why. And I had no conscious awareness of it, like you said earlier. But being an entrepreneur is fucking great, because every time you hide from those emotions, it costs you fucking money. And look, you can lose relationships and you can find other people. You can lose friends and find other people. But when you keep losing money and you're like, fuck, I'm losing, what's going on? And I realize through business for me has been the greatest teacher. So I started learning conflict, learning thick skin, learning dealing with criticism. And I've tested loads of different things. Number one is deleting them, banning them. Number two is arguing with them, which was arguing with them was great progress for me, mate. Honestly, arguing with a critic was like unbelievable therapy for me. Other people, they should do the opposite and be silent. And then I learned to appreciate them and I learned all the different strategies and tactics. So all those things that you mentioned about your reputation, what other people say about you, having criticism, if it's successful, if there's lots of views, you know, all the hate, I learned with the accountability of business and staff and employees and loans and overheads, I learned. And honestly, mate, that picked so many scabs and scars and wounds from when I was a child. And mate, it still comes up. A mutual friend of ours recently told me that I wasn't going to be involved in a venture that I've been involved with him in for years. It was the right decision. I'd already made it. My brand has moved on. He needed a break from the... And it was... every box was ticked. And I said, yeah, mate, I agree. That's cool. And I kept myself cool. And we talked about another deal we were doing. And he'd been ghosting me for a few weeks. And I knew this was coming. But I still felt fucking humiliation. Inside. Like when I was fat kid getting rejected by the girls. And I had to sit in it for a whole fucking day. And I said to my wife, wow, you know, like a decision's just been made. I would have made it. It's the right decision. It's really good. It's actually good for my brand because my brand has moved on. And I said to her, yeah, I feel so much fucking shame. Wow. It picked a scab of being 11 years old. Fuck. But I was so proud that I allowed myself to go there and face that. And you said about facing your demons. I completely agree with that. So let's now bring it to answering the initial question with a podcast. If you have a podcast, you are going to have interviews that you do live where it goes wrong. You're going to have interviews you do live where all the live equipment fucks up. You're going to have interviews you go live where your guest is going to act like a diva or walk out. You're going to have interviews where you're going to forget the questions.
You're not selling it to me very well.
No. I'm not trying to
Should
sell
I be
it
writing
to you.
This down?
Yeah. All right, well, let me say another way.
Rather tell me now, and then when it happens, I'm like,
let me tell you another way. If you don't have all of that, you won't have a successful podcast.
Yeah, you're playing.
So when we had this massive diva moment, it was completely unprofessional what this guy did. Like as if the guy, let's say he invented the aeroplane, but now he was designing a new feature. But he said, I'm not talking about the aeroplane. No, I don't want to talk about the aeroplane. I only want to talk about this new thing I'm designing. As if you designed the fucking aeroplane. That's why you're on the podcasts. And yeah, I mean, look, the episode will come out. I haven't named and shamed or publicly talked about it in any way. I've respected the man's wishes, but you'll fucking know. So you're going to get divas. You're going to get loads of criticism. Like when I interviewed Dorian Yates, mate, I was awful. I kept interrupting him. I had no acuity. It was my worst performance. But I intentionally leave that up. It's great because imagine an artist. Their first picture when they were five, was it any good? No, it was shit. Ed Sheeran says you've got to write a lot of shit songs before you write good songs. So I love the journey whereby the lives could fuck up. Harry once, he's going to hate me for saying this, but I'm going to keep reminding. Harry went to the wrong location when we interviewed, do you want to say his name? Theo Pafitis. So Harry went to central London instead of his office. So I turned up with Theo and thankfully I had a Zoom H1 in my bag, but basically I had the iPhone talking to it like this and he had a little Zoom H1. And he's one of the biggest entrepreneurs in the country and he's never stopped taking the piss out of me for that
scene. I've got a process to help you get over that trauma, bro.
Just sign up to his course.
Yes, I'll send you a link in an hour, yeah?
And then we went all the way over to Switzerland and I interviewed one of my idols, you know, the head of Audemars Piguet, and none of the equipment worked. And I'm sitting there embarrassed. I mispronounced his surname, you know, all this. But that, when you look back, they're the memorable parts. So what I would say with a podcast or content or putting yourself out there is actually the things that you're worried about, the criticism, the issues, the stuff going wrong, you'll look back and you'll learn more from that than you do the good content. And that'll be the stories that you'll tell. So it's actually like, who fucking cares? If you try and go live and there's a water bottle in front, who cares? At least you tried to go live. But think about all the people you're not going to meet. And what this all boils down to, I believe, because what is shame?
I believe shame, you could argue in proper trauma, shame is how you feel about yourself. But actually, if there was no one else on the planet, I don't think you'd experience shame. I think ultimately shame is what we fear other people will think about us.
Mm.
That's what I think shame is. So people are going to think anyway. They're going to have an opinion anyway. They're going to be wrong, and sometimes they're going to be right. We've got a mutual friend, and I naively thought he wouldn't talk behind my back because he's a friend. But I fucking busted him doing it. And then for about a nanosecond, I felt shame and anger.
Mm.
And then I thought, wait a minute, why is that a problem?
Mm.
Why does it even matter? Have I talked about my friends behind their back? Yes, we've all fucking done it. So get off your high horse. We've all done it. And I try not to. I try and talk about people how they would talk about me, but we've all done it. So will people talk behind your back? Yeah. Will they disagree with you? Yeah. Will they troll you? Yeah. Will they hate you? Yeah. Will they often be wrong? Yeah. Will they misunderstand you and misjudge you? Yeah. But will they be right sometimes? Yeah. Can you learn from that? Yeah. And does what they say or think in any way matter? No. Unless you don't put your podcast out there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it brings up a whole interesting concept, which people talk about. People sell fridge magnets on, but they don't show you how to do it. And that is, you've got to be yourself. Oh yeah, just be yourself.
That's
right?
The hardest thing in the world.
It's like, okay, well, yeah, fine.
What does that mean?
I'm bought into it. Sign me up. Like, where's the process, right?
Yeah.
So as a speaker, I've been on stage, and because under tension, I can try and be funny. When I'm funny, I can cross the line, unintentionally offend people. Sometimes intentionally anyway, follow it up just to make it count. for example, I told a true story of a time I bought a gold Versace jacket. And in the story, as it happened factually.
Can you tell us?
Well, if I had my black Versace, my gold Versace jacket, I would. But what happened was, I tell a story about guilt. And my partner and I went to Bicester Village. I saw this gold Versace jacket. It's literally gold, dude. You know, when I put it on, I look like an anorexic roast chicken. It's crazy. Like, if I angle it correctly, I can pick up Sky News. It's great. in fact, I'll wear it one day. So, but in the true story, the actual series of events, we went to Kensington Roof Gardens that night. I walked in. I still had a top knot back then and zero on the sides and the back. And the first thing that happened was I walked into the club and I attracted everybody on MDMA. They like saw this jacket and they were like, oh my God, what's going on? And I thought it was pretty cool. So if you're single out there and you want to rent the jacket, it has magical powers. drop me a DM. So I went to the toilet and, I often, when I do humor or swearing in speaking, I often do self-deprecating because it's safer that way and, all that kind of stuff. So I was in the men's and legitimately a black guy came and stood next to me and acknowledged my jacket. And then I looked at his penis and I went, well, thank you. It's an honor to be acknowledged by a black guy, in the men's toilet. And he laughed and he thought it was funny. So anyway, so I told the joke, the story of this jacket and the magical powers of jacket. And I wasn't going to buy the jacket because I felt guilty and my dad was in a care home and the jacket was 800 pounds. And I was like, why should I buy this jacket? Because my dad's a care home. And so it's a very powerful story. But what I didn't realize from naivety is that story, because I'm technically stereotyping, because they thought it was a made up joke, you see, it was an actual experience. That story to an audience and cold audience can come across stereotypical. In the sense that I used to tell the story, put two flip charts up, imagine the flip charts were urinals, pull a black guy up from the audience, make him stand 5 meters away, get your dick out, hanging out, go, yeah, hold both arms, mind, it was like a whole thing. And for 3 years, I never had any complaints. In fact, it was like people would come to my seminars just to watch that story, not even learn anything. And I was infamous for that story. And two white ladies put a one-star review on my Facebook saying I'm racist, basically, and I'm stereotyping. So that was probably my first one-star-ish hardcore experience of like, oh my God, I got criticized. And what the upside, the good thing about that was, I had to go and reflect and say, A, did I intend to be racist? No. B, what have I learned from that? And C, am I okay telling that story or not? Because I think what I'm learning from you and the journey that I'm going on in terms of creating content and watching you, and I do really admire how much you put out and how much you're actually getting more truer to yourself and being, as I heard someone comment to you and give you a compliment, unapologetically you. I love that. We have these little moments of feedback, don't we? And then you've got to decide, no, I'm cool with that story or I'm not. So on Zoom, when I'm running my masterclass on Zoom, I choose not to swear because I had people give me feedback saying my kids are in the background, I'd love to let them listen in. And I went, actually, you know what? I'm going to choose not to swear in that context. So through these one-star reviews and criticisms, we get an opportunity to decide, great, do I just want to swear? Do I want to be Gary Vaynerchuk and effing blind and sound like I need an exorcism, right? And be cool with that and then just roll with it upside and downside. Or am I going to decide actually who I am right now, and I might change tomorrow, is I want to serve kids with consciousness, so therefore I'm not going to swear on Zoom. So that's what I'm learning is that...
You swear on my podcast, though.
Well, I mean, if you don't swear on your podcast, you might not invite me back. So I think through these mechanisms, we get an opportunity then to decide who we are, whereas maybe there's a misconception that we were like born a certain way. I think you create yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know we love the concept of creativity, and therefore, by putting yourself out there, getting these painful pieces of feedback, the rejections, the negative emotions, we get an opportunity to self-reflect and go, fuck it, I'm going to decide to swear or not. Or I'm going to decide to be political or not. I actually brought up the topic of racism in a seminar recently where I tried to explain for the first time, actually from a conversation I had with you, to start talking about topics that are sensitive that I'm passionate about. And I'm actually passionate about racism because I grew up in racism and I saw my dad literally beating up black guys with an inch of their life and then the police picking them up and beating them up again.
Okay,
I know, it's fucking hardcore, dude.
Yeah.
So, but I can't deny the fact that I grew up in white South Africa. And of course I'm going to have stereotypes. Of course I'm going to have prejudice or unconscious bias. Even though I'm not intentionally racist, I'm going to have all of those experiences. So I tried to explain this in a seminar. It was really awkward. I felt embarrassed to talk about this. And I sarcastically said, oh yeah, because I'm racist, right? And someone was recording that. She didn't like the event and basically blackmailed me to say like, you know, I'm going to put this out there.
Wow.
So I chose to refund because I realized I can be clearer in my communication. She didn't want to be there anyway, so I respect that. But I had to like sit back and go, is this a topic I'm going to talk about? And is it something I want to address? And the answer is yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all of these awkward moments are opportunities of self-reflection where we create ourselves. So that's kind of what I want to throw into the mix on that.
Yeah. I love listening to that. Why is it good? Just pops up again. These difficult things that happen to you. If you always ask yourself when you're experiencing pain, guilt, shame, or thing, why is this good? You can always find that. So obviously if you had real trauma, that's hard. But the reason why I think this is great, what we've just done here, mostly you, is because you've given an example of extreme trauma, but you've been able to see why it served you and why you attracted it and what good came of it. Because a lot of people, they hold on to their trauma because our traumas are real to us.
Mm.
And I think sometimes people think that certain types of trauma, well, there's no good in it. But I would just challenge anyone listening, if they're holding themselves back through trauma or they feel that trauma has held themselves back, try and ask that question. I'm not trying to prove anything. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm trying to give you a gift. Because that question's served me really well. Now, it also helps regulate negative emotion.
Mm.
So I have this sort of paradox whereby you'll have a negative emotion and it can sometimes just really flood your whole body. And you can ask yourself over and over, why is this good? And sometimes you can sell yourself quite well on why this is good. But sometimes you need to sit in it for a bit longer and bathe in it, because otherwise, if every emotion is necessary and has a purpose, which I believe it does, otherwise you wouldn't have that emotion. Because I think what some people do is they try and ignore or bury those negative emotions too quickly. So what I would say, one, ask why this is good anytime you're feeling a negative emotion. But two, don't try and brush it under the carpet too quick. Because sometimes people have got pretty good at getting over things a bit too quick and pushing them away, and they don't, you don't fully face them.
Like, it's an old school way of thinking, isn't it? Like, don't cry, don't show your emotion, that's weakness. And actually, that's vulnerability, I think,
100%. And then you asked, I'm glad you raised this, because I've thought about this so many times. Oh, just be yourself. Well, easier said than done. And what does that actually mean?
And how do you get there? It's like, you know.
Yeah. So how do you get there surely comes after what does it mean?
Mm.
Because I know some people who I would deem as more wise and experienced than me in the areas of personal development and human behavior. I know some people who would say, there is nothing wrong with you. You are perfect as you are. And that's said quite a lot, isn't it, in spirituality and personal development. There is nothing wrong with you. You are perfect as you are. Well, no, if you're a dick to someone and you lose your shit or you abuse someone, that is not perfect. And you can do fucking better.
Mm.
And you should at least fucking try to do better. So I have this paradox with myself where I'm like, I know some things that I feel and then I do. They're forgivable of me. And I know where they come from now when I was a child. And those emotions are strong and I should not hate that about myself, because there's some things about myself I just don't like and I wish I wasn't like. But then occasionally, and thankfully it's not too much, but occasionally I'm like, nah, actually you were just a bit of a dick there and you didn't need to do that and you shouldn't have done that. So I think being yourself is not an excuse to act in reaction to your emotion. But you could argue that's being yourself, because your emotions come from your upbringing. So you have these automatic emotions from trauma and experience and pleasure that you experienced in your childhood. So you're just being yourself. So I believe being yourself, I don't know if I've got this right, I'm going to chuck a theory out there, is the paradoxical balance of loving yourself for who you are and allowing yourself to be true to who you are and how you feel. Paradoxically, being able to control those emotions and question in that moment if that is who you really are. So it's honoring the emotions, but controlling the emotions. I'll give you an example of this. You know, people say, it's really good to be vulnerable. Not always.
Not always, yeah.
Actually, not true. I'm not going to name them, but there are two or three people in my team who are senior in my team who people will know, where actually I have over and over again shown vulnerability to them. Mistake.
Yeah.
The best thing I can do is show strength and power and leadership, because they look at Rob's the guy who's got a brilliant mindset. My business partner made me the godfather of his son because he believed that I've got the best mindset out of anyone he knows. So actually, I shouldn't show him vulnerability even if I'm feeling it. And I know there's people in my team that, pardon the somewhat, well, just say, you know that phrase, shit the bed? I don't actually know what that means, because does anyone actually shit the bed? And if they did, is it in context with, I don't know, but, you know, on the rare occasions that I've shit the bed, like, the people around me, they shat their bed because I shat the bed. And they went and shat everyone else's bed. And had I just not shat the bed, they wouldn't have shat the bed and all the other beds wouldn't have been shat. And so I had this little note to myself.
That's the name of this podcast.
Yeah, episode. Shit the bed.
Yeah. How to shit the bed and influence people.
Yes, that's great. So vulnerability is not always good. And I've got to know which people and which situations it's good to be that and not good to be that. I was, Harry, you were recording this. I was at an event and I told everyone how I pissed the bed like when I was a lot older than I should have been. And it was wrong. I didn't get that bit right. It was, and I went one step further and then two steps further and then three steps further. And I've got these fucking embarrassing stories of things. And I just knew that was not the right environment to say that, even though it was me being vulnerable and authentic. What do you think about that? And
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I agree. Next question. Yeah. So it's an experiment, isn't it? A bit like this conversation. And I suppose our education system doesn't help us out because we get conditioned that there's a right way and a wrong way and you get punished if you get it wrong.
Yeah.
But how do you know the right way if you don't try? And if you're looking for the right way in business, you're going to get shocked. And you're going to fail. It is a constant experiment, and that's why, you know, I don't know why Gary Vaynerchuk says self-awareness is the secret to success, but I know self-awareness is the secret to success because you and I, you probably more than myself, have met lots of financially successful people, but mentally, emotionally, familiarly, relationship-wise, all that kind of stuff, spiritually, you know, whatever areas of life you want to box them into, they're screwed, right? So knowing yourself above all else, know thyself, not just your true self, in other words, your purpose and why you're here, your natural gifts and talents, but also your demons, right? And when we experience negative emotions, I don't like to control my negative emotions because they're quite radical. And it's like trying to tame a wild horse. What I for me feels more linguistically correct is I feel that emotion. I might feel enraged by something. You know what enrages me is when I go to a supermarket or a public thing and I see a parent basically abusing a child. Are you fucking piece of shit in a supermarket? Dude, the rage. I actually start trembling, which obviously goes back to the trauma, right? And then I have to just ask myself in that moment in time, what am I going to choose? I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. I could intervene if I want to. So with awareness comes choice. You can feel the negative emotion and choose to do your shopping. Or you can feel the intensity of a heckler at your event, you know, when you're about to do the pitch or something and someone goes, and you're like, fucking hell, I'm going to slam that person and screw the event up, right? So for me, self-awareness gives us choice. That's important. We can choose, you know, love and doing what we love. And in that situation, I don't mean just unicorns. I mean, maybe what you love is to stand up and tell that woman, hey, you know what? It's not cool to gawk your phlegm out. And so, you know, that's important. So by being vulnerable, I've been vulnerable with, particularly when I first started my business, I was like vulnerable with my story, vulnerable with my trauma, vulnerable with my lunch, vulnerable with my garnish, vulnerable with my undies when I wear them on Tuesdays. It's too much information because now all of that info in the wrong hands can be used for manipulation. So from an experiential point of view, I think being vulnerable with your friends is fucking powerful. Like I believe, you know, I'm more vulnerable with you than pretty much anyone else, I would imagine. And that one feels cathartic and liberating and freeing. And then there's a time and a place where I suppose you build up that rapport and trust with people and audiences to go, that's the point and the barrier of vulnerability I'm willing to share. And that's why I was a bit introspective after our previous episode where you were probing and you respectfully didn't continue, and thanks for that, because I hadn't actually anticipated going down into a very sensitive story which involved other people. But had we not done that podcast episode, I wouldn't have had thought about it and just meditated on it and just role played in my mind, in my imagination, you know, what would have happened if I went down that road. And therefore it's given me the freedom to come here today, and maybe this episode isn't as good as that episode, or maybe it is or it isn't. But I know for myself, I feel happier because in the journey of vulnerability, in the journey of exploring myself, in the journey of getting it wrong, and I'm going to come down to this, I try to be perfect in my relationship, and it ended. So now I'm like, you know what? Instead of trying to walk around on eggshells, and I'm not saying like I was 99% not myself. I'm talking about the 1 or 2% here or there. I would rather just not have to walk on eggshells and see what happens anyway. Do you know what I mean? So it's an experiment, dude. And I think everyone's journey and self-awareness will empower them in their vulnerability. Mm. Like if you don't know your demons, what are you going to be vulnerable about?
Yeah.
I'm running this company to save the world. Right. Fine. You know, I don't think that's people's primary purpose and motivation. And I think it's cool to say that. I had a very, through running lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of events, I was very tired after one particular event. I was, you know, business was growing faster than me. and I think you know what that feels like.
Mm.
And a dude came into me and said, man, like, you've got so much energy. It was like 1 a.m. I was asking people and quizzing them, like, why did you come here? What did you learn? Because I was new to Facebook ads and doing research. And I was like, I paid for that dude to be there. I'm going to fucking quiz him. And he said, why do you do this? And in the past, I do the fridge magnet answer. I'm here to save the world. I'm here to live my purpose. I'm here to... And I just went, honestly, dude, when I was 19, I fucked up. I failed as a dad. I was a pussy. My girlfriend's dad told me I'd be a piece of shit and I wouldn't be amount to anything. And if you look at the area I came from, yeah, odds are severely stacked against me. And the problem was, I fucking believed him. And I sacrificed the most beautiful thing I've ever created, my daughter. And I don't fucking know her. And every single day of my life, I regret that moment. Every single day of my life, I have to live with the reality that there's like this hole in my heart, which is ironic because I do have a rare heart condition, where I failed as a dad, as a man. And the reason I'm here is that I just want to be a better person. And in some way, I can hopefully make amends to that regret and that pain. Because hopefully one day when she gets to meet me and I do have a podcast and she's fucking listening to it and we're swearing, she's going to go, my dad's a good bastard. And she'll reach out and I can look her in the eye and say, you know what? I'm sorry, but I am who I am because of you. And that was like the most fucking honest moment I've ever had, was just being there with that guy. And you went, I'm going to sign up. And I went, I'm going to start saying that more often. So I think, you know, as we take action, like you with your prolific podcasting, you just have these moments where just a little bit of an awareness unlocks and you experiment with your vulnerability and you get like, oh shit, people use that to manipulate me or blackmail me. Or actually that did unlock someone in the audience and they said, God, I felt like you were talking to me. And then that inspired them to work with us. It's an experiment, bro. And I think if we can just embrace that, and I need to take my own advice here and do so with our best intentions, you will find yourself over time. And like art, that journey never stops. You know? Mm. So, yeah.
I think that is the perfect way to end. That's just a beautiful moment to end. Start your fucking podcast, Ryan. Commit. Come on. Everyone watching and listening will want it.
This is the biggest podcast.
What would it be called?
How to launch a podcast. A podcast over 3 years. Yeah. Pre-qualified. It's all actually been created, dude. So
great.
The Super Genius Life podcast there, I've got the audio intro. We've done the album.
Super Genius is going to be called.
Super Genius
Life. You've got 2 episodes in the bank here. You know so many cool people as well. So
Yeah. So I appreciate you. And thanks for your support and love. And, you know, I know a lot of people see your financial wisdom. I know a lot of people see your prolific content creation. But I see you, like, offline. And I've got to say, I think you're one of the most kindest, generous, supportive people I've ever met. So
thank you.
I'm really grateful for you. Love you, bro.
Boom. You too.
Now, my friend Ryan Pinnick, he's been a friend for around a decade. He is the owner and founder of Super Genius. And Ryan specializes on helping you unleash your genius within, maximize your potential. And at supergenius.tv, Ryan runs regular masterclasses on accessing this genius within you. How to master your life, how to turn your passion and genius into a professional business. And content on business coaching, leadership, spirituality, and relationships. So if you go right now to supergenius.tv, that's supergenius.tv, I give Ryan my highest glowing recommendation. Not just as someone I've collabed with, not just as someone I've done business with, but a dear personal friend. So take him up on his kind gifts and go to supergenius.tv.